Hey, Jen.
Hey, Marcos.
Will you walk with me?
Let's walk.
That's dope. So on the walk today, I'd like to talk about my new release and my ambitions for a release calendar for this next 6 months, which would rock. So it's Alanda. This is a podcast where Jim and I talk about our journey in life and as creative people. It comes from Se hace el camino al andar, the expression which means you make the path by walking. Hey, Jim, tell me something good that's going on in your life right now. Oh, wait, no, difficult. Good. Tell me something difficult. That's what we agreed to. Yeah. We'll save the good for last.
It's good to end with good, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. So something bad we'll start with, or something hopefully constructive. Yeah, I think one thing that I am still, it still kind of weighs on me is a lack of publication of my works. That's a little bit, it's challenging. As a writer, you want your work to be seen, and it's very hard to do that by yourself, there are some standout people who were able to go the independent route. Like the guy who wrote Wool, which was a really popular ebook, mostly Hugh Howey. And there are people who can make it work, but anyway, for me it's difficult because it's been like this for a while now. And, I just started to send out my short story, summer 2001. It's about 13,000 words. And thank you. And yeah, I hope that it gets out there. I still haven't submitted my poetry chapbook, Love and Other Reasons to Kill Yourself, which is a tongue-in-cheek title, but it's also there's some real emotion in there. That's difficult for sure.
Yeah.
So processing that, and just trying to put myself out there more. I think what I'll do is I'll have some free stuff too, that I want to put out regularly. So who knows? I might do that with the chapbook. We'll see. But yeah, just dealing with that, that sort of that rejection, and from what I hear, like it has happened to a lot of writers. Stephen King has been very open about being rejected a lot.
Yeah.
Just try not to get discouraged and keep improving and keep putting myself, my stuff out there. Yeah.
Yeah, man. I hear you. I think a major challenge for me has that's fresh on my mind right now is dating and trying to I had this really long kind of romantic song that I did a bunch of versions of, and I worked on with our friend Daniel, Daniel Youssef Tehrani. And one time in the bridge, sort of the most dramatic part, I changed the lyric from, what was it? I'm too heartbroken. Okay, so my original lyric was something like, I'm too heartbroken to really have the heart for dating. And then I changed the lyric one time to, I think I ought to put more effort into dating. Mm-hmm. And Daniel just stopped. He was playing guitar and he just stopped and he laughed. It's like, yeah, then you wouldn't even need this song, bro. And so, like, there it is, or a paradox or a dichotomy, that I, you know, I think a lot of the creative impulse is a lot like love and even like being in love, you know. I was listening to artists talk about how people need to find, it's helpful. Well, people want to find their narrative in your music, right? So it's maybe good to leave the meaning open-ended, right? So, and I reconsidered this one spoken word piece where I start with an artist, right, is a person who's a dork about something, a geek about something. And it just occurred to me, I think I could change that, just change the word love, you know, something like that. Love is being a dork about something, a geek about someone, you know, someone, right, probably. Love is being a dork about someone, a geek about someone. Your mind can't stop running. And actually, now I recall that was the origin of that phrase that I don't remember if it was me or her, but my ex-wife, we used to say, I'm a dork about you, you know, or I'm a dork for you, or something like that, right? And so the impulse to create and to share, as you say, right, to publish, to be public, is related to love and related to probably Eros, Philos, and Agape, right? These different kinds of love. And yet I've, I don't know. There's a lot of barriers between like what I'm comfortable with and what dating seems to be in, you know, the 2020s. So I resolved that I was going to go on to, like, I paid for eHarmony, and I resolved, okay, I'm going to go on every day just for a couple of minutes and see if that does, if it's more effective than only going on, you know, once a month. I've maybe somewhat avoided it. There's anxiety, but it's also like, I don't have this, especially in these last few days where I've been not like, whether it's external things structuring my day or me having to self-structure my day for my own work, romance. Right. Like, that's not, I don't know where to put that on my to-do list, you know?
It's remarkably similar, that rejection of your love and the rejection of your love.
You know? Yeah. Yes.
It's it's a hard thing. It's something I've said a few times, and I keep repeating that, you know, for an artist, rejection and criticism is pretty hard because art is so personal and intimate. It's so you. You know, in a way that other things, you know, kind of aren't. Mm. You know, like you can do a physical task, and to some extent, you can blame it on other factors like, you know, height or weight or reach mm. or whatever
mm. mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
that are out of your control, but. And sometimes writers do that when they talk about talent, but anyway, not to belabor the point, but absolutely. So do we want to talk about something?
Yeah. You ready? Go for it. Tell me something good.
Okay. I'll keep mine just short and sweet. I feel good.
All right.
It's so important for artists. It's so simple. Maybe it's overlooked, but like feeling good is really important, especially for certain kinds of art, mm-hmm. novel writing, for instance.
Yeah.
And you know, from what I've read, like it took Leonardo da Vinci many years to complete the Mona Lisa, and He cherished it and he took it with him everywhere. And so that wow. can be quite a commitment too. And so I think getting your life in order, exercise, getting enough sleep, getting sunlight in the morning. What am I missing? Eating healthy. You know, I like fasting, intermittent fasting. Supplementing and just making sure you're hitting your macros and your micros, and making sure that you have a sort of a daily practice. To me, it's really important that I write something every day, and that builds momentum. And so I feel good. You know, the bad news was I wasn't publishing, but the good news is that I am writing, and that hard work will pay off, and I feel positive about it. So that's my nugget of good news right there.
Mm, cool. Yeah, man. Thank you for sharing that. The good news, and yes, absolutely, like wellness. A thought that I was processing today was like, I think freedom is about making meaningful choices. And then, you know, only some of the choices are how choices, right? Only some of the choices are what choices, what your actions, you know, and you can't always, there are limits to how much you can control what you have to do in a day, right? But, there's also how and why, you know, and sounds like you're, you know, making the choices that you can about the how, you know, sort of your attitude toward your work and your life and your emotions and the why. Well, the why, that's maybe more complicated, but you have a sense of purpose, it seems.
Just to emphasize the importance of like having that will. It is paramount in the human condition. Without it, we I think we cease to be, you know, in multiple senses of the word.
Mm. All right. I'm gonna go ahead and say though that my good news, something that's encouraging me right now, is that putting this collection of songs together by digging through my trove of files that I've recorded for the last since about 2009.
Wow.
It's been a good process, and it's reminded me of my core sense of mission and my vocation to be vulnerable. I think there's good work here, but it's stuff that I didn't share before, mostly, or it's versions of things where my limitations are not hidden. You know, they're not smoothed over. But my sense of mission, I think, is clear. So it's this collection is gotta figure out the title, but so I think that this is a series that I might sort of mix in with more formal releases. And these will be informal releases just on Bandcamp, probably. And they are, what's my working title? My working title is, okay, which title do you like better? Actually, I have a bunch of options. Where are all my options? Well, anyhow, sound studies, this is what I got right now. Sound Studies, Early Etudes, Volume 1, Voice y Tambor. And it's some of my earliest recordings, where I just plugged in a Zoom as an audio interface, a Zoom recorder as an audio interface to my old Mac Mini, and clicked on GarageBand and tried to make it work. And what I was clear about, though, is that my voice as a songwriter, because I'd started writing songs about 7 years before that, or so, and I'd been gradually gaining momentum, but my voice as a songwriter came from, well, all the things that were in my background, but then really like activated by this blessed experience I had of studying Afriboricua folklore in Puerto Rico, in college, and from there my sense of mission has always been wanting to be all of who I am and have a practice that centers on the voice and the drum, and whatever else spins out from there, but it centers on the voice and the drum, especially the acoustic, unmediated voice and drum, and centers on the autochthonous rhythms of Puerto Rico.
Can you define that word?
So autochthonous comes from geology, and an autochthonous stone is found in the place where it was formed.
So it's like indigenous?
Yeah. It's like indigenous, except, you know, indigenous has acquired other social meanings.
Mm-hmm. Understood.
Yeah. So bomba is is primarily African. Although maestros, especially Modesto Cepeda, would emphasize that it's Puerto Rican and that it is a synthesis of Taino and European and African influences. But it's not, you know, so if you call it indigenous music, people would think that, well, what do you think people would think? Would that work? Could you call it indigenous music? Of Puerto Rico? Yeah.
I think people might misunderstand that. I mean, they might see Puerto Rico as this melting pot, but I think, you know, like you said, indigenous does have this connotation to Native Americans often. Yeah. Especially in the context of
actually being, it's currently being used politically exclusively to mean that.
Yeah, and especially when people think of Puerto Rico. So, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. So, autóctonos was a word I learned from Modesto Cepeda. And I heard it in Spanish, right? Autóctono.
Cool.
And you know, it sounds a lot like autonomous. I think it also sort of names the last words of the last phrase of one of the theses that I read about bomba. The last phrase is that is in order to further decolonize. And you could, that's my project too, you know? Yeah. And I'm all this other stuff, you know? Absolutely. So, I think I'd like, okay. So half of them are, in Espanol, half of them are in English. All of them, are centered around or powered by Afriboricua rhythms. There's a lot of plena and there's some bomba. And the stuff in English synthesizes with or syncretizes, mixes with some other stylistic influences. So do you have a thought about what you'd want to hear?
I want to open it up to you to start with whatever you think makes the most sense. Take us on a little bit of a journey. Maybe, I don't know, we'll listen to, depending on how many you want to listen to, 3, 4, something like that.
Okay.
And please.
Cool, cool. So I guess actually let's start with Cantaré Mi Bomba. So this is a version of the song that's on my album Code Switching, but this is just my first take where I'm, and it ended up, this is just the bottom layer of the recording I actually put on the album Code Switching. But here you notice like, oh, I'm singing all the parts. I'm doing the call and the response, right? Let's just try listening to some of that.
Has oído de mi bomba boricua. Te interesa el sabor de mi isla rica. La fue marginalizada por el racismo y colonialismo. Pero ya de los marines mi bomba llegó. Cantaré mi bomba pa todo el mundo. Cantaré mi bomba con sus sentidos profundos. Cantaré mi bomba de mi bate en Borinquen. Cantaré mi bomba a lo boricua en la luna. Huepa, A mí me gusta el merengue, hip hop, reggae, rock y sal.
So in that, well, but before I say, I'd sort of like to bring out in what you could hear there, what did you notice? So you've heard that song, a version of that song before.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What did you notice in hearing this kind of naked?
Yeah, I mean it's very naked. I could almost picture you naked just doing like it feels like one of those songs, and it would be very appropriate for the context because I feel like it's raw, right? It's very intentionally focused and humble and sincere and authentic. Mm. It really reflects a lot of your personality, you know. You know, when we first met, I think that was one of the things that I noticed about you. You have a very genuine, authentic multiculturalness. You know, you look whiter than I do, whatever that means. And you're more Latino than I am, whatever that means. but
these are mysteries. I don't know if you know. I'm not saying any of those things are true, but those are interesting.
Yeah.
All right, for sure. No, yeah, man. Thank you. That's beautiful. Actually, all of what you shared, I think, is really beautiful. And let me just say, in case Don Modesto hears this, Don Modesto is a disciplined, and all of his family are kind, disciplined people. And Don Modesto is a nice Catholic guy, and he did not teach us to play or practice bomba with no clothes on.
Okay, disclaimer.
Let that be clear. But yeah, like naked, emotionally naked, naked in terms of production. And, you know, at the time I was, it was responding to what had most inspired me in música afro-caribeña my whole life. And then especially, I mean, I heard plena, I heard salsas, I heard merengue, bachata, música jíbera, danza, growing up. I didn't hear bomba growing up. And that's crazy because my family, you know, loved specifically Black influenced, Black centering music of Cuba and Puerto Rico, right? But bomba was so historically marginalized that I didn't hear it growing up. And so when I did hear bomba first with a touring performance in Milwaukee and then in Puerto Rico, right? To hear it again after William Cepeda and Grupo Afro-Rican Jazz, I think was the group he was touring with at the time, after they left Milwaukee, to hear it again you know, I had to go to Puerto Rico pretty much, or I could have gone to Chicago, but I wanted to go to Puerto Rico, right? I could have gone to New York, but to be in a place where there are lots of people performing it, you know, I had to go to Puerto Rico. So I did. And what I, with help from Professor Fern Bronson, thank you, Fern. Yeah, but like what really moved me, I think the most was these, what was so beautiful about the experience of Bomba and Plena in persona, especially in the like the most intimate settings, and then like sharing it with family, you know, was really where it's at. That's how I wanted to share it. And so on the one hand, I wanted to experience that intimacy, and I wanted to, I was moved by that intimacy, because you, in a sense, like I wanted to share it with my family when I got back, but it's like, you always felt like family, alrededor del bate, de baile de bomba, in the circle of toque, a bomba jam. And I was also really impressed by the long lyrical melodies of that, the way that Ismael Rivera and Rafael Cortijo's band would perform them. And yeah, and so, yeah, beep, 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 beep. That's kind of influenced by those kinds of melodies. So it's like this very drum centering sound, rhythm driven, but the melody's pretty. It has some like the, like in classical music, especially Vini's waltzes, and waltzes are just another kind of folklore really, but the long melody, that's one thing that's really valued. Yeah, so that could be an example of how, even with just a voice and a drum, there's a syncretic cultural expression here that may have some European descended influences, maybe through the danza, where long melodies are very valued. Well, so anyhow, the core dichotomy that I want to name is that this song was the first song I wrote after coming back from Puerto Rico, and it was a sense of mission, you know, cantaré mi bomba, I will sing mi bomba, right, claiming, because I noticed that's what bomberos did, you said mi bomba, right, because it's, I think it comes from, like, if you're taking turns being the lead vocalist, you know, in a circle of different singers in a jam, you know, when you take your turn on the lead, I see a mi bomba, you know, my bomba. And you're intentionally, there's a certain challenge, you know, kind of competitive aspect to it. So, you know, you want to claim, or just proud, right? You claim, I see a mi bomba, you know, pero a la vez es la bomba compartida, right? And that's not contradictory, right? In this case, it's a shared expression. But now I avoided it again. All right. What I want to name is that I was very much moved by being in this like root setting. And then at the same time, I realized, well, a big thing I realized is that I don't have a bombero style voice. I have more a bolero style voice, right? It's a lyrical voice, you know, it's kind of soft, voice, you know, in my, when I'm most comfortable. And I remember if I heard this in Puerto Rico, but I remember when Pleneros would jam and hang out with Pleneros at La Casa de Chema, it would be an insult to say, lo que tú cante es bolero, right? What you're singing, oh, you're not a Plenero. What you sing is boleros. You weren't supposed to be soft, you know? But I was. And yeah. Listening back to this, I'm so happy to just have this draft, because because this gives sort of the quality of what it's like to be in the room with people playing plena or bomba intimately with family with nothing to prove, right? And probably maybe sort of at the end of the day, where it's not like you're going to be up all night. Like this is, we're sort of winding down with this, you know, relaxing. And I love that you can hear my voice, and in its strengths and weaknesses, you know. And I love that the voice and the drum are, you know, I am playing the drum while I sing. So there's a certain interaction that happens, you know, that's its own kind of polyrhythm. And I love that the drums are way louder than any sound tech would ever say they should be in this, or the drum, just one drum, would ever say it should be in this kind of recording. I mean, that's overwhelmingly been my experience with Afro-Caribbean music, that the drums end up being pushed, especially the hand drums end up being pushed pretty far back in the sound production. And I think that's especially because most instruments in any sound production, you're supposed to try to put them, EQ them into a certain pocket within the audible spectrum, you know? And hand drums, especially barriles, to really hear the full sound, it's like from, you know, very low megahertz to very high. There's this, you know, so like I really like how when you're playing intimately and nobody's, and relatively quietly, you hear that, right? So the explicit part of the beat there in a sika is dun 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 dun, right? But there's the walking of the hands also to me adds this elaboration that I find beautiful, right? And so my thought from really early on was like making elaborating on Afri-Boricua roots culture. Let's start, like it's often done by like, oh, I know what we'll do. We'll add and I do that on some of the tracks here, right? Or we'll add a trap beat or whatever the kids think is cool right now. No, I thought, mira, haz que podemos oír el tambor y podemos seguir el tambor. Let's just hear the drum, you know, and let's hear the parts of the playing, especially in plena. Traditional pleneros play with two hands, but in most recordings you can only hear what one hand is doing. That's, you know, like half the sound, half the rhythm you're losing, you know. But yeah, that was my starting point of inspiration. And I lost track of it in many ways, but my goal for these 6 months, where I have a little grant, and have some time, is to release a lot by embracing the freedom of limitation, embracing my decolonizing, if only decolonizing my own consciousness and my own being, project of centering, going back to centering the rhythms of Puerto Rico and the voice. And then just a little aberration. There's a traditional bass instrument in Bomba. I don't have one of those. I don't know if I'll be able to get one of those. But so I'll probably, my goal is to, the new things that I'm sharing, to just have like 8 tracks maximum, you know, where, oh man, if you don't discipline yourself, it's so easy to just keep saying, oh wait, what if I added this, you know? And it's like, eventually you have a cake that's just frosting.
Yeah, I mean, I can certainly relate to trying to do a project and trying to kind of control the reins, but mm-hmm. you know, the art is kind of like a wild stallion that doesn't wanna obey. And
yeah,
as a writer, I think, well, I can relate also with the idea that, well, I think all writers can, with the idea that there's often a dual sort of two kind of opposing incentives. And some people are lucky and they don't have this, but like, again, for most artists, there's like the art that they want to make, and then there's the art that, you know, that maybe they should, from a you know, financial marketing perspective. Yeah, and one of the things that I respect about you is that you always stick to, you know, the former for the most part, as far as I can tell. And you're very dogged about that, and and I mean that in the most positive sense.
I'm pro canine.
I respect that, and there are many things that one could say about that, about whether one should or shouldn't. I think in the end, you want to be, at the end of the day, you want to be proud of what you made. If you can find a balance, great. But I think every artist has to find that. So in terms of writing, there are a few genres that are extremely popular. Romance just sells more than anything else.
Yeah.
And I have no interest at all to write romance.
Maybe you should think you should put more effort into dating in your fiction.
Yeah. What? No, that's great, because
you could write yourself the perfect partner, bro.
Yeah. No, seriously, like, writing is a great outlet for that, and
yeah,
you know, George R. R. Martin talks about in interviews how he grew up in a very kind of cloistered environment, and his whole world was basically five blocks, and he had a very active imagination. It really reminds me of myself, because I was a lot like that. But anyway, the one thing I have decided that one conclusion I've made is that you can sometimes find something that you're passionate about that is maybe a little bit more marketable. And so for instance, I like genre, specifically I like science fiction. But I also like literary, which is like non-genre fiction.
Yeah.
No superpowers, you know, like boring reality stuff. And I'm kidding, of course.
It's because very problematic to define the whole concept literary, and defining it by negation there's so much that's problematic there.
Yes.
And there are parallels, absolutely, in other areas of the arts too.
Mm-hmm. Great point. So my point, simply to wrap up on this idea, is that I could, as a writer, I might say, well, I can focus more on science fiction, and it is something that I love. And you know, you don't have to tell me to write it for me to write it. And you know, I'm lucky enough that that's pretty marketable. It just turns out that literary is just not, doesn't sell very much. And so maybe I can write literary for free, right? Or you know, there are ways in which you can sort of game the system, so to speak, that you can still have passion, you can still do,
sure,
what you love, and still have some, you know, you're not quite bending at the knee for the will of consumerist, you know, capitalist mentality, but you are you're putting your best foot forward from, you know, in the world in which we live.
Yeah. Well, and so for me, that in many ways, that's in theory, like, really easy, because I love everything. in you know, if I'm not anxious, if I'm not in a fight or flight state, I can enjoy any music, you know, and I love, if there's not something that pushes me away from it, you know, or that in the content that's pushing me away. So I love, you know, I love pop. I could scroll up and down the radio dial when that was a thing. It's still a thing, but I can scroll up and down the radio dial and enjoy everything. Right. Now that, you know, being everything isn't a good marketing strategy, right? But it addresses that question in a sense of what's the end and what's a means to an end, you know? So I embrace this bomba-centered Afri-Boricua roots music catalyzed process that just happened, you know, for me. But it really happened by, like, playing the drums and being a musical omnivore, you know? The next thing that I'd like to play, and it's short so we can just listen the whole thing, is a song that is sort of mixes genres, but it's also still just a pretty naked demo. It's just voice and drums, and And it also, in terms of the lyrics, addresses this struggle of maybe some struggle that's something about being who you are versus selling yourself as who it seems that you need to be.
Try to be pleasant. Nob 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 nob. Don't clench your teeth. Nob nob nob. Smile if he looks at you. Nob nob. But don't hold his gaze. Nob nob nob. Don't talk to him. Nob nob nob. I doubt you'll succeed. Nob nob nob. Try to be pleasant. Nob nob nob. And get what you need. Nah, nah, doo, doo. And you need. You need. You need. To succeed. Succeed.
That was pleasant. Can I ask you about like the? Well, actually, I'd like to take a guess at what you're talking about. Give some of just.
Yeah.
Yeah, what I was thinking about as I was listening to the lyrics, and you just tell me how wrong I am because I'm probably gonna be wrong.
No, it's hopefully open for interpretation on this song.
So what I think about when I hear that is the idea that I hear a few things, but one of them is this, and it's appropriate because it's a performance, it's a song, but it's the idea that, you know, your how do I put it, like your social face is sort of a performance, like, you know, it goes back to what Shakespeare was saying, right? The
we are all
actors and the world is a stage. You know, it's the idea that outwardly you have to present a certain face, otherwise there are certain social consequences. But maybe inside there's a struggle that you can't outwardly express, you know? That maybe there are real reasons, consequences that, you know, that deter you from, you know, being more open, while at the same time the song is doing that, right? It's expressing that interior monologue that's not happening. And so it's, in a way, it's saying, it's showing the struggle that's not being shown in real life, in song, in a performance. It's very meta in that way. It's very cool. How wrong was I?
No, man, that's what's up. I mean, I'll like, there's a specific, you know, incident that gave rise to the song, you know, but yeah, what you're describing very much is along those lines. I noticed, it was when I was a student at the Martha Graham School of Contemporary Dance. And it was kind of a breakthrough for me. I had a scholarship, but it was only a half scholarship. So I still had to work at Starbucks more hours than I would have wanted to.
But it did give you a nice song, though.
It gave me several nice songs.
So,
and,
okay, I just heard one.
And oh yeah, but there was a certain warning sign about dance was that I'd be in class and I'd like the music would stop, but it would keep going in my head, and I would be like recomposing it in my head and then miss the next thing we were supposed to learn and do, and then the music would start again. So that's one reason why. I was always headed toward a music focus. But I saw this peer of mine on the subway away from class one day, and I saw her before she recognized me, you know, and I saw this. I saw all the, there was this anxiety in her emotions, in her face, before she recognized me. And then she recognized me. She placed me within a certain, in my head, I imagined that she placed me within a certain social sphere, you know, of hers. And she turned on the smile, you know, and it was also odd because like I noticed she's not that nice to me at school, right? You know, but like, yeah, you know, and so it was empathizing with what I, sensed from what she was negotiating, and how it's like, oh yeah, now I can relate to that. It's just more, but sort of imagining her experience of it let me access, you know, feelings or anxieties I might feel myself. But I don't know, you know, it's that fiction thing we've talked about, right? That if how fiction can sort of help you be more real emotionally.
Yeah, it helps you practice empathy, like real empathy, or to live a life that you wouldn't otherwise have lived. You were. I mean, in some sense, it's the ultimate, you know, way to show compassion for someone is to, at least in that song, you know, be her. I thought that was, I really thought it was about you. Yeah, that was.
Well, it could be about me too, right? But I wouldn't have processed that way except through that frame, you know, of recognizing those anxieties in someone else.
Right. And that's actually kind of what I wanted to say too, is how these private struggles are so universal.
Yeah.
And yet we're so afraid to express them. It seems so absurd, I think, if we really understood just how universal these things are. You know, it's kind of like what they tell you when you do public speaking. You know, it's like everybody's nervous. Then it doesn't seem, you know, like you're the weird one.
Yeah. So more to come. Thank you. Your feedback's really helpful. And I think my project is kind of two elements. One of well, it's basically just getting the workflow, getting the pipeline going, and just putting stuff out and posting about it a little, at least, but not not worrying about how well I can market it, you know. And I think I'm realizing that there can be this constructive dialogue as long as, you know, all my devices are working with each other and my old files will open and stuff. There can be this really constructive dialogue between what I've made and what I'm called to make, you know? So it'll be a combination of stuff that of new productions and getting out, and so those will be the primary wide releases, and then I'm also gonna build my archive of sort of my my studies, right? So that's a key word for it, you know, the stuff that like in classical music, it's a whole genre of piano music, especially. It's like, this is a study. And I'll be on Bandcamp, or maybe on my website, I'll be putting out the studies, series of them. It's a few volumes, at least three, that I have primed already. And then that's for like supporters, you know, people. Actually, the studies, maybe they'll just be Patreon, I don't know. You know, for people who are already like on side or already interested in the work, you know. And then the wide releases, you know, I'll be more focused on hopefully winning a new audience. But two last things. One, I embrace this freedom of limitation, because I realize when elaboration becomes like masking, I don't want to do that anymore, you know? And most of my musical ideas are really well expressed with a bass line, two or maybe three Afriboricua centered percussion lines, and a call and response vocals, right? So one lead vocal and two harmonized response vocals. Ja. Ja. Bueno. Yeah, ja. Pretty much that. Yeah, ja. Ja, más o menos. Y tal vez a veces un piano o guitarra, right? Mm-hmm. I'd like to develop. So that's the notion, that hopefully if I keep that discipline and I have my template of 8 tracks, you know, it will be easier for me to get through this, because I write a lot. And these 6 months will be successful if at the end of it, my recordings give you a sense of who I am, strengths and weaknesses, and also makes it clear that I'm prolific. Most of what I've done, nobody's heard. So that's what I'm working on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know, it's really interesting as someone who's heard you know, wide range of your music from different time periods, and you know, I'm sure I haven't heard most of what you have, but I've heard such an interesting evolution, or you know, I kind of almost don't even want to put it that way, because it sort of implies some things are better than others. It's just
actually, but that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, I don't mean
yeah
sorry. So a flow of creativity and personality. So, I think anyone would enjoy your personality, your corazón, right? Your heart, I think, really shines in the music. And so, anyway, just extolling what I think is just great music. And we will provide the links in the notes for the podcast. So thank you for sharing, my friend.
A la orden. Se hace el camino
al andar.
Sí, señor.